Before we begin with the argument, I observe there are several counsel at Appellee's table. Is there a agreed-upon division of time?
Yes, the government asks I'll be the first. I'll be for 2 minutes and just put the rest of these two gentlemen.
Very well. Thank you. You may approach and proceed whenever you're ready with In Re Interest of Baby Girl Peeing.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Jerome Janulevich. I'm an attorney in Grand Island, Nebraska, and I represent the appellants in this matter, who are the parents of Baby Girl P. And for purposes of the fact that this is all recorded now, I'll just refer to my clients as Mike and Vicky, if that
perfectly fine.
Your Honor, this is kind of a hard case to get into, and rather than going through all the facts, what I'll simply focus on is the meat of the issue in this matter. My client's parental rights to their young daughter was terminated after the state filed a motion to terminate parental rights based on the statutory language at 43.292 subsection 5, which requires the state show that in order to terminate parental rights, that the parents suffer from a mental illness or mental deficiency, and that that mental illness or mental deficiency prevents them from performing their parental responsibilities, and that condition is expected to last for a prolonged and indeterminate time period. The parents in this case, the appellants, were initially involved in a juvenile court action in 2002. And at that time, they worked with Health and Human Services, there were family support providers provided to the family. My clients underwent psychological examinations, and there was various services that were provided to them. At that time, they had two children. One child, their oldest child, was a daughter. That child was never removed in that proceeding from the care of my clients. Their young son at that time, who was quite young when the case was filed, was removed from their care. The evidence was that that child suffered from what's called Fragile X syndrome, was profoundly affected by that infirmity, and was placed in foster care. And finally, as the case progressed, my clients ended up agreeing to guardianship to be established for that child because the state was attempting to terminate the parental rights. Then we go forward 7 years to when baby girl T was born. The evidence indicates that Vicky went to St. Francis Medical Center in Grand Island complaining of stomach cramps. It was then determined that, in fact, she was pregnant and within a short time gave birth to a child by cesarean section, a full-term baby girl. Hospital staff contacted the Grand Island Police Department, and an officer man went out and made contact with Vicky, and her observations were that basically, and her understanding from hospital staff was that basically Vicky was unable to tell time and could not read. Officer Mann made her observations. He went back, did not place the child in emergency protective custody at that time while the child was in the hospital. But the state filed a motion, filed a petition concerning baby girl P while the child is still in the hospital. My clients were not allowed to take their daughter home with them. Hospital staff observed at the time while Vicky was at the hospital that she could not tell time, she could not read. I think there was some testimony that she was unable to tell hospital staff basic information such as her address or phone number.
There seems to me there's evidence in the record that at least leads one to believe that Vicky came to the emergency room not even understanding that she was pregnant.
That's what the record would indicate, Your Honor, is that she went with stomach cramps, did not understand that she was pregnant at the time.
I mean, that seems to me to be a pretty profound situation where a woman does not understand that she's pregnant.
I would agree with that statement, Your Honor, but what the record doesn't contain, personally, I don't know, is You know, are there other instances of that type of thing happening? How frequently or rare or unusual is that? And I don't think that's discussed in the record, or that there was ever any evidence adduced in the record. Common sense would indicate that what you said would be correct. That most people in that situation would understand what's going on with
the body. So there's nothing in the record of any sort of medical testimony that would rebut the common sense approach, if you will.
That would be correct, Your Honor. Correct statement. While the case was pending, after the initial petition was filed, the state filed a motion to terminate the parental rights of my clients, and the case went forward from there. The bulk of the state's case, there was never a separate adjudication hearing. There's one set of hearings where the court took up the matter of the termination of parental rights. At that hearing, the bulk of the state's case was primarily evidence of what had happened in 2002 concerning the older son, Delno, and the older daughter. There's testimony from a psychologist, Dr. Height, who evaluated both of my clients in 2002. Her testimony was that Vicki suffered from a mild mental retardation and that she had an adjustment reaction at that time. Dr. Height testified that mental retardation is not a condition that she would expect to change substantially over time. She did admit that if Vicki was suffering from an adjustment reaction at the time that she did the evaluation, that adjustment reaction stress might have caused her to perform under her abilities on an IQ test. But clearly, and I don't want to mislead the court, it's obvious from the record that Vicki has some mental retardation issues or some developmental disability issues. Michael, on the other hand, at the time in 2002 when he was evaluated, he was diagnosed as having an adjustment reaction and a personality disorder. And Dr. Height testified that with respect to adjustment reactions, that those things are transitory in nature. They're what psychologists refer to as a diagnosis under axis one, where they don't see that as a permanent feature of the person's character, but rather a transitory thing that may be affected by stress at the time or what have you. She also diagnosed Michael with having a personality disorder, which she indicated was an axis 2 diagnosis, which is more of a personality feature of a long-standing nature. However, Dr. Height did admit that professional research in journals has shown that persons with personality disorder, that disorder can resolve itself over time without even person seeking out treatment, just over the course of maturity and aging of the individual. That is a condition that in persons can resolve itself. Dr. Height admitted that she had not seen either Mike or Vicki since 2002, that she did not know whether this diagnosis that she arrived at in 2002 would still apply in 2009 when she testified, and she did not know the current functioning level of either of my clients. Again, the bulk of the testimony goes along the same lines. It all related to what was the situation in 2002. Really, the only testimony as to what was happening currently with regard to my clients was testimony of a caseworker who sat in on some of the visitations between my clients and their daughter. There's some testimony that on one or two visits, Michael appeared to be tired and she thought had dozed a little bit during the visit, and that Victoria was having trouble recognizing when it was time to feed the child because, again, she now tell time. Our position is that the court erred in looking at this other than this is a married couple. Can this married couple together provide the care necessary for their daughter? And I think the limitations that Victoria had kind of were bled over and used as a reason why Michael's parental rights should be terminated as well. There's precious little testimony as to what their current situation was, although there was certainly testimony that the condition had changed substantially from 2002 when the previous case had been filed, in that in 2002 they were living with Vicky's parents. My clients, their two children, and Vicky's parents were living all together in a home along with Victoria's older brother, who was profoundly disabled, and together the home situation was just not adequate. Since then, my clients had moved into their own home. My client, Michael, had maintained steady employment, and these individuals were self-sufficient. So there's really no showing in the record that these people were currently unable to care for their child.
Very well. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Bob Cascioli from the County Attorney's Office in Grand Island. I'm here on behalf of the state. What I came forward to have an address to the court was that I think it's very important. It's something I hope there'll be some statement within the final decisions of this court, and that's going on. It's how old does the test have to be before it's no good? I want to bring the court's attention that these prior evaluations of both the mother and the father did show that both being mentally ill or on the borderline. Mr. Gentile, I forgot to mention the father was placed at a 74, according to Ann Buettner, his counselor, that time. There's been continuous talk about the particular, this test is not enough to show what's happening here or what, where the parents are at. And I believe we need to understand that there is a difference in, for example, the Axis 1, Axis 2 evaluations, that there's some, in Axis 2, that's pretty much locked in. Not saying there is nothing that's solid, written in stone, but that's pretty strong. What I want to argue to this court is that this is just the weight of the evidence. The court has to make a determination whether that's not is enough and not whether or not the test is valid. In this case here, I'm going to argue again, we had Dr. Hyde testify about that, which she talked about the two axes of this test was valid. I also want to ask the court that another thing with this matter is to consider, we're talking about a child who also has been diagnosed with syndrome, Fragile X syndrome, I'm sorry. When we looked at this case here, we took the information we had with the mother and father and placed that, would they be able to parent a child, if they parent this particular child? I think that should be actually in every case, but this one was extremely important. Ms. Nelson, who was genetic counselor, we did have that, her presentation there. And in the beginning, with the early stages here, we're trying to learn a little bit about this child. We're trying to figure out, is this child going to have a lot of the symptoms? And what I understood from Ms. Nelson and her statements is, this child has that problem, and the question here is the degree of the problem. Will it be minimal, or will it be maximum? Well, we've already found out that apparently there's some things showing up, and I'm going to ask you to look at Ms. Bretthauer's, the foster mother's testimony. She talked about some of the characteristics of this child, feeding habits and stuff that were consistent with the child as being affected by Fragile X. I think we've made a showing that there is something developing here, and we have to address it immediately in this child's life. And as Dr. Nelson pointed out, it's critical that we do not ignore we have any problems with doing that. We took that into consideration to this point, and we thought the evidence within itself was enough. We don't believe that as mother and father cannot do it with a child with severe. We don't think that can do it with a child with a minimal, even if it turns out to be just a slight amount of effect. They're going to have difficulties. We're going to again ask you to ask you real quick to keep observation of such things too. Is those behaviors of the mother and the father during even visits at the hospital, they're very important because they stand there to support any conclusions that came from the doctors originally. So, unless there's any questions, I'll stop there.
There's not. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And you are taking the remainder of the time, I gather?
I have one half.
Okay. So whatever is left, I guess, your co-counsel will get.
If it pleases the court, my name is Jerry Fogarty. I'm the guardian ad litem, a Grand Island attorney appointed to represent Baby Girl P. I am here today to support the state's argument that the state did prove by clear and convincing evidence the elements that they needed to for termination of parental rights of both parents. And a question arose during the Mr. Janet Levitz's presentation about whether there's some medical evidence as far as how likely it is for a person to not know that they're pregnant. My recollection is that in the deposition of the doctor, I believe it was Dr. Setchi, he indicated, I apologize, I can't cite to the exact location, but I believe he indicated that in all his years of practice, he had like three occasions of that. And my recollection is he said that two of those were situations where the person was like in denial or having some type of psychological reason to not accept the fact that they're pregnant. So it is a very rare circumstance, at least according to that doctor's experience, and also according to common sense, as the court pointed out. Now, we have a situation here where both parents were not aware that the mother was pregnant, despite the fact that they both were parents of two prior children. Victoria had two children, along with Mike. He was involved in raising the children and participated in the pregnancy care, et cetera, those two prior children, and yet they were not aware of the pregnancy in this instant case. The mother, while at the hospital, was unable to recognize and properly take care of the child's needs. Mr. Jan Levitz pointed out that she was unable to identify, I believe, where she lived, with phone numbers, ability to spell, and to various other things that a mother, I think, in the process of raising a child would need to know. In the prior Health and Human Services case involving the two older children, the record is clear that both parents failed to comply and learn to properly parent those children. And the result of that was that both of these children were placed in guardianships in lieu of termination, basically. They were faced with the possibility of termination of parental rights, and they made arrangements for guardianship procedures. So that also indicates that they were unable to, at that time, properly parent and learn from the instructions that was given to them by Child Protective Services and other agencies. Another indication as to their inability to learn or their failure to learn was during the parental visits in this case. They had limited contact with the child, and yet, despite that limited contact, they were inattentive to the child. The father actually fell asleep a couple times during the visits. The mother was still unable to properly detect when the child needed to be burped and things of that nature and take care of those matters. And the father appeared not to want to participate in feeding the child and other elements of care. Another factor I believe is important is that both parents at the hospital wanted to give custody to the family friend. I would argue that that's basically an admission on their part that they are unable to care for the child. Now, the evidence of Dr. Hyde was that both parents were low functioning. Both parents were unable to parent without the assistance from a higher functioning support system. Now, in the past, they had that higher support care system, but they were unable to parent the two children that they had back in 2002 that were ultimately winding up in the guardianship proceeding. And in the present case, the support group that they had had, their mother's mother and father were no longer available to them. So they would be on their own, and that is something that Dr. Height, back in 2002 evaluation, indicated that would not be proper, that they would not be able to parent a child under those circumstances without this assistance. And indeed, she had serious doubts as to what mother could actually take care of herself. Now, the father, he was diagnosed as a personality disorder with paranoid features. He has a long history of hostility and threats of violence, and back in the 2002 case, and that is still present in the incident case. He was very hostile, he's profane, and as the state pointed out in their brief, he interrupted the court proceedings several times, and Mr. Cashwell's brief points out the actual citations to those events. He also indicated, or his behaviors indicated, that he was not able to parent the children or the child during the visitation that he did have, and that his he has not improved from the 2002 situation where Dr. Hyde evaluated him. Now, we have a situation here where baby girl P does have federal X syndrome. The foster mother did testify that she does have physical indications and behavioral indications of that. Dr. Mueller testified that it is very important whether we know the level of the future disability or not. It's very important that the child receive immediate therapeutic intervention, various therapies to address the possible situation. I would also like to point out that the parents, either not understanding this or are just being contrary, refused to approve of such therapy. And eventually, I believe they did sign the proper documentation to get that. They, on repeated occasions, either refused or forgot to approve of that type of intervention. The genetic counselor indicated that baby Rose is 50% likely to have some sort of retardation, and in fact it's more likely than not because the mother is a full-range Hydro X carrier herself. And I would argue that the evidence shows that these two parents are unable to parent even a normal child. As pointed out perhaps by their prior giving up the guardianship of Terry, who is a normal child, and this situation, we're faced with a situation where baby girl P may well have a serious and higher needs to be addressed, and they're not capable of complying with that.
Thank you. Thank you. And Mr. Campbell then has some time.
No, we're out of time.
We're totally out of time. Apparently you're done. Thank you. And the appellant's time had also expired. Very well. The cause is submitted and counsel are excused. Thank you very much.